if you see the biggest players in the world taking huge positions, and not only just that, like JP Morgan is trying to sell you picks and shovels. At some point in time, not only are they going to let it rip if they were trying to suppress it, they're going to leverage it to the hilt to make themselves wealthy in the process as well too. If you have an asset 10 times the size of Bitcoin that can just absolutely rip from 2 to 4,000, what, you don't think Bitcoin could easily go from 100 to 200, 100 to 400? You don't think that Bitcoin could go from 100 to a million? You know exactly what they're going to do is just turn on the taps and just flood the system. And where do you think that's going to go? It would not shock me to see that we go from like 80K to 800. Like a 10X is not out of the realm for Bitcoin. It's totally within the norm.
What's up, guys? 70,000 of you guys keep coming back every single month, but 71% are not subscribed. So you're going to miss out on some of the great Green Candle content. So make sure that you're hitting that subscribe button with the bell notification so you get notified every time I drop a video. All right, now let's get back into this great interview. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Nathan of the BTC Mentor. But Nate, last time we talked, we were going deep into the coordinated attack from Wall Street against MSTR. Michael Saylor is over in MENA as we speak, talking to potentially some of these sovereign wealth funds in Abu Dhabi and others who have been linked to Bitcoin. There's been rumblings of a secret whale that is now FOMOing into Bitcoin. So what do you think with all of this noise coming in on these big giant players now figuring Bitcoin out?
Man, I think that this is always going to happen. It probably already has been happening in the shadows. Like, there's no way that this has been, like, we're on like year 16 right now, 2009. Let me do the quick math. There's no way that the people haven't been strategically taking positions, even if they don't want to get out there like Saylor and do it publicly. So I'm not surprised to see energy rich countries. I think they're going to be first and foremost the biggest players in that space. So it makes sense for like Saudi Arabia, UAE, all these guys to start stacking in their sovereign wealth fund, particularly when there's growing concerns surrounding treasuries. We see that a lot of foreign countries are divesting from treasuries. China's going all in on gold, and it doesn't mean they're completely getting rid of them, not buying any at all, but they're looking for other alternatives. So why wouldn't you necessarily hedge your bets? But I gotta tell you, man, the one thing that's just jumping out me lately is that we're coming up on the end of the year. We're coming up on the end of 2025, which is coming up on basically the end of what should have been another cycle here. And it really didn't feel like one at this point in time. But the thing that struck me this morning when I was looking at, I believe a Saylor bought like almost another $1 billion of Bitcoin, is that, Brandon, I want to get your take on this too. Nobody blew up this year. There hasn't been an FTX or a Mt. Gox. There hasn't been a major exchange or a major hack. There hasn't been that catastrophic moment where like we're reminded of the lesson of like not your keys, not your coins. And I wonder what that's ultimately done to sentiment as well as like I worry that that lesson's getting lost here. So I love seeing the hype that's going on over there right now, but I worry that everyone is getting way too comfortable in TradFi. Now, I'm not saying that any of these guys are necessarily a bad actor, but like if there's not one in the space right now, there will be. Someone's going to make that mistake. I don't think we're past the point that we never see another hack or blow up or somebody was rehypothecating. Like it's not that like all those times are done. There will never be another FTX. And I worry with all the excitement because I think you're right. I think the bigger players are getting in. They're going to stack in their sovereign wealth fund. And I think for most normies, most people that are just maybe tiptoeing into Bitcoin, they're stacking it like a Roth IRA, right? They're stacking it in their brokerage account. And I almost worry that we're getting way too comfortable with large centralized entities holding on to vast amounts of Bitcoin and everybody just buying their share or their stock instead of actually holding it themselves. I don't know. What do you think about that, man?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's an interesting point there. And, you know, I think the treasury companies kind of coming all in, it has been a worry of mine for quite some time. I mean, there were 64 when Trump got elected last year. Now there's like just under 210. So, I mean, we've seen over a 3X here in a short order. And I mean, I think that all these players, I mean, me and you, Nate, could come together and form a company and then get, you know, probably 2, 3, maybe even 5X the amount that normally we could get just from walking into a bank. And we would use that to buy Bitcoin. Granted, hopefully we could afford to, you know, pay that debt obligation off. But I mean, with Bitcoin crashing now too, I think a lot of these Bitcoin treasury companies that have come on are underwater right now. You see a lot of these that came in, just did one smash buy, kind of tried to do it for their stocks.
and you know, their stocks went up immediately, and then now they're all kind of almost looking like meme coins, except for you know, MSTR maybe. But they're trying to play the game and essentially do the same things that MicroStrategy is doing. But the difference is MicroStrategy has over 650,000 Bitcoin, and the next closest has 50,000. So it's literally a difference of 600,000 Bitcoin. So, you know, I think that's potentially going to be maybe not as colossal as the FTX collapse, but I could definitely see a few of those companies starting to go belly up. And, you know, I think over time, it is something that is worrisome to me, because I think last time we spoke, you know, I was telling you the dip, you see a lot of the wallets with 10 million sats, honestly, like sell off Bitcoin during a dip when you would hope the, you know, the retail would start to come in and buy. And then you see the number of institutions with 1,000 just go parabolic. So, you know, what are you seeing out there? Do you think that, you know, a lot of these plebs or these big players that are just starting to come in, are the ones that are selling off? Or do you think, you know, maybe it's the OGs that are selling, that's kind of been that narrative for this entire cycle?
I think there's kind of two things at play here. And one is like completely speculative. So we know that some of the large, like the OGs were selling. We can see on chain that like really old wallets were moving large amounts of old coins, which makes perfect sense, right? I mean, you've been in the space for a long time. You've held on for this long. Of course, you're going to have that moment of like, maybe you want the lifestyle change. It's also, you might want to even de-risk to some extent, which I'm not saying that Bitcoin is in any way a risk asset. It is the trustless, the least risk asset that you can hold. However, if you're holding on to like tens of billions of dollars of Bitcoin, and that is in any way public knowledge, you might have a bit of a target on your back. So I could see like you'd be like, you know what, I got 10 billion or I got 100 billion in Bitcoin, maybe I can just live off 8 or 7 and I'll pay for some additional security. I could see that being a motivation to, again, purely from the lifestyle standpoint, because I mean, we touched on it last time, but that Bitcoin, you don't want for itself, you want it for the things that it can provide for you and your family. So maybe those guys want to provide something for their family other than actually holding on to the Bitcoin. And I'm sure they did not peel off all of their stacks. So I think that a lot of the selling is coming from OGs. And the other one that I worry about, particularly as we're seeing like price corrections, these treasury companies underwater, is centralization within the traditional finance system. And what I mean by that is, we all know that like, we've seen like, I know HSBC has had to pay out tons of fines and JP Morgan has had to pay out tons of fines. Like these traditional financial players, they do some sneaky, shady shit. They always have. And when they get caught, they just pay for it. It's a pay to play system, right? It's not that no one at JP Morgan is ever going to jail. They might just have to have a fine that was 10% of the profits they made doing that shady stuff. So with that, one of the things that I do worry about, kind of going back to that self-custody aspect, because really that's how we keep everybody in check. That's how you actually protect yourself at the end of the day, is that something along the lines of, Bitcoin's hurting. Now, if you've got a large centralized pool of Bitcoin, you can be damn sure that they're manipulating the price. I don't know how effective they're going to be at it, but they've got way more information than you do. They've got way more capital to deploy behind it. You've got all the derivatives now built on top of it. I can guarantee that if they're trying to take a position or trying to help somebody, one of their clients or somebody take a position, why not take a stab at pushing it down? Go for those liquidations. That just gives more Bitcoin to them. And I worry that with the treasury companies, the ones outside of Strategy that are starting to hurt, they're going to see all those basically just get gobbled up by the big entities, by like the Cantor Fitzgeralds, by the JP Morgans, by the Black Rocks, right? That they're going to basically scoop in and buy them at the distressed, which is going to concentrate more of that Bitcoin purchasing power within those traditional financial units, giving them even more ammunition to try and manipulate the price. Because I don't know about you, but I'm still incredibly bullish, even in the medium term. Give me 3 to 6 months, I think we are absolutely off to the races. I don't think the current price action is really reflective of sentiment or anything fundamental to Bitcoin. I do think that there was maybe some stop loss hunting that was going on there, that we had people getting taken out for taking on too much leverage, which is, again, that's the old lesson. Guys, do not take leverage with your Bitcoin. Just don't do it. I've seen too many people get absolutely wiped out over the years. And even during the last correction, I had people that I was getting calls from that were getting margin called that thought they were way in the clear. When we were at $1.20, 80 was like, it's not going to happen. There's no way that's going to be an issue. And sure enough, it absolutely was. Don't make it easy for the old players that we're trying to take out here to take your Bitcoin. That's what I'm trying to like essentially get at, is that, well, it's so exciting to see these news. They are taking positions. They're going to fuck with things, and they can do it in the short term. They absolutely can. Not in the long term, not even necessarily in the medium term. And also at some point in time, they're just going to want to pump their own bags. But ultimately, like, as much as like for the past year, I've been so stoked on the sovereign adoption, I'm a little more hesitant. And it's only because I feel that we haven't had that pain point to remember those important lessons. We may have strayed off the beaten path a little bit away from self-custody. Like if Saudi Arabia wants to pump my bags, absolutely go for it. It's money for enemies. But I want everybody else to be in the same position where they actually have their money, they control their money, and then they can benefit from the battle between the different sovereigns and giant transnationalist financial companies trying to get in on something years later.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is like these guys have just like endless bags. It's not just billions, it's trillions at this point. So, I think it's going to be a very interesting to how it's playing out. But I've got a little bit of theory here, Nathan. I'm curious. I haven't really talked to too many people about it now, but I was just doing some reflecting here the other day, and I honestly don't think we've really had a bull market, so to speak, here in maybe since 2017, because in 2020 and 21, obviously we saw the crash with the Cerveza sickness or, COVID. Everybody knows what happened there. But, we also had FTX, which you mentioned, the big blow up. And, it was pretty obvious that they were selling, paper Bitcoin to their clients. So one, the demand that we were seeing wasn't even as much as really the buying pressure that was going. And then two, we saw that blow up happen, and that probably more than likely cut it pretty short because it started that effect of not only the Celsius, but the BlockFi's, not only the FTX, but the Celsius, BlockFi's, and all these others kind of starting that domino effect of all of them starting to fall. And then, of course, we had a lot of FUD around Bitcoin at that time, too. So it just kind of delayed that overall bull run. So I think last cycle, we probably could have gotten different dynamics. And then this cycle, we also have now these big players that you're lining out, right? BlackRock, JP Morgan, all of these bankers now coming in. And JP Morgan has been known to manipulate markets. And now all of a sudden they're flipping it on its head. We went over how they potentially are manipulating MSTR and all the crazy things going on with the treasury companies. But I wouldn't be surprised at this point if now that all of a sudden they're releasing these Bitcoin bonds right as, Bitcoin falls like 30, 40%. I mean, it seems a little coincidental timing. So do you think that the four-year cycle is, I guess, kind of a moot point at this point? And do you think that we've actually seen a bull run here in the past, 7 years or so?
No, there hasn't necessarily been a bull run. There's been a little bit more. There's a little more excitement in 2021, but I don't think we've actually seen a bull one. I would agree with that sentiment. It hasn't felt like one. And we were kind of making excuses for it along the way, right? We kind of justified the China mining ban in terms of why we got this double top and it got legs cut out from underneath it, because everyone was expecting, myself included, to hit six figures the last cycle. And then this one, we barely did. So even if I take that, let's say I grant the China mining and the FTX took the legs out from under the previous cycle, that we would have otherwise maybe hit around 100K. Well, then to say like 120 was a bull run the next way around, 20% up from that position, that just doesn't intuitively make sense to me. So I'm with you there. I think that 2017 absolutely was a bull run. 2021 was probably more a reflection of what was going on in terms of COVID. Like everything online was getting pumped at that point in time. I'm trying to find a way to phrase this. I don't think it was just related to Bitcoin in terms of the price action that we saw there. So for example, right, around the COVID era, YouTube, that was absolutely in its heyday. And of course it was, because everyone was stuck at home glued to their phones. And so you've got to you can't take the negative and actually know, but if we never got locked down, if people weren't glued to their phones the whole time, would retail have even had any idea about Bitcoin? I think it would look a lot more like what we see today, where I'm not getting questions from cab drivers and cousins and random people on the street, that I'm not seeing that euphoria in the no-coiner space, the pre-coiner space. I think the only reason that we had this excitement, it had all this attention on it at the moment, is because one, everyone was just bored out of their mind, stuck on their screen, living digitally, and it gave us this artificial pump. But I don't think I very much could agree with the sentiment that it wasn't a bull run. Even this past run, we would expect usually in bull runs, we get 30% corrections along the way, but we barely got 30% up at times. So it definitely feels like it feels a little bit more reminiscent of post gold ETF in terms of both were kind of just a slow grind upward. We ultimately all know where this is going, but I think that the narrative that it's diminishing returns. We're going to continue to have diminishing returns. I think that's complete bullshit. Like, don't think for 1 second that this thing can't just absolutely rip your face off. I'm saying that's going to happen in the next month or 6 months. I don't know when that's going to happen. But one, if you see the biggest players in the world, going back to MENA right now, if you see the biggest players in the world taking huge positions, and not only just that, like JP Morgan is trying to sell you picks and shovels, like they're trying to get in on every other way they could possibly profit around it. At some point in time, not only are they going to let it rip if they were trying to suppress it, right? Not saying they were, but maybe they were, probably were. Not saying they're going to just even just let it rip. They're going to leverage it to the hilt to get make themselves wealthy in the process as well, too.
What if I told you you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
Suppress it, right? Not saying they were, but maybe they were, probably were. Not saying they're going to just even just let it rip. They're going to leverage it to the hilt to get make themselves wealthy in the process as well, too. They want that stronger position on their balance sheet. They'll go to their friends in the media, and you know they have friends and people bought in the media. They're going to put out their own research papers. They're going to talk about it publicly. They're going to basically just scoop up as much as they can. They'll probably go long. They can issue themselves, I'm sure, debt at some point as well, too, and take on larger positions. When they're ready, they're going to let it absolutely take off. And I think everyone's just kind of getting into their positions. The best example I can think of is that, go back to 2021 and tell me that gold was going to like just rip to $4,000. I would have thought you were just absolutely crazy. Like, there's no way. We're talking about at that point in time, like a $10 trillion asset, that this thing is going to look like a 2017 kind of Bitcoin run. It's going to have a parabolic move up. We had the gold bugs, guys like Larry Lepard talking about, the big print that these moves were coming. But even for me, like historically looking, gold would be, it would do a bit of a leg up and it would just chop forever, right? It had been so boring for so long, despite the growth in the money supply, despite the debasement, that I never would have believed it. But if you can see an asset that is more than, well, currently is coming up on 10 times the size of Bitcoin. If you have an asset 10 times the size of Bitcoin that can just absolutely rip from 2 to 4,000, what, you don't think Bitcoin could easily go from 100 to 200, 100 to 400? You don't think that Bitcoin could go from 100 to a million? Make no mistake. And the other one too that I think is really interesting is that at some point in time, if we do see that retail, that FOMO, if the big institutions do try to gin it up as well, we're going to start to see more psychological hurdles come into play, right? The biggest obvious one was the 100K, which is why I'm not surprised that we spent so much time there. And I wouldn't be surprised to spend a lot of time here because that was such a dream, fascination, just a euphoric number, right? And it, humans, despite it, like... unit bias is absolutely a thing, which even going to Bitcoin versus Sats, we got Square launching Bitcoin at all terminals and they're doing it with the Bitcoin bead. It's like 4,000 Bitcoin for your coffee, right? No, it's 4,000 Sats in my opinion, but to each their own. But that unit bias, I still hear of people that say, I can't afford a Bitcoin. They have no idea about that you can buy 1/100,000,000th of this thing, that you can buy just a tiny piece of it. They still think of it in the whole. And the only reason I bring that up is because, again, I just try to imagine if people are coming back into the space, if we're seeing another run, let's say we're breaking past like 180, we're on our way to 200. Where is the next psychological hurdle? I don't think it's 200,000. I don't think it's 300,000. You could maybe make a case for 250,000 or 500,000, but realistically, the next place where we're going to spend a lot of time and probably fight to get through it is at that $1 million mark. I think there's a decent amount of air between here and there when things eventually rip. And again, make no mistake, I could just list a ton of stuff off. We got $38 trillion in debt. We got 50-year mortgages coming to the U.S. They're giving every child born in the U.S. $2,000 to go spend an account, which if they're younger millennial parents, there's a good chance that's just going in IBIT. Would I rather self-custody? Yeah, but it's probably just going to IBIT and Fidelity. We're talking about stimmy checks. Like all around the world, we can see we're talking about QE now back on the books for the Federal Reserve. Like we're having liquidity problems and monetary problems all around the existing system because, of course, it's going to continue to get worse. It's going to fracture. It's going to fall apart. You know exactly what they're going to do is just turn on the taps and just flood the system. And where do you think that's going to go? We ripped from like the COVID crashes like 3,000 to 20,000, no problem. There's no reason we can't go realistically. And I know this is like, I really am this bullish. I can tell you exactly where it's going. I just don't know the timeline. It would not shock me to see that we go from like 80K to 800. Like a 10X is not out of the realm for Bitcoin. It's totally within the norm. And if we did it kind of even stair step over the next, say, 2 years, 2026, 2027, you might not even it might not feel ridiculous. It could just be like, yeah, we're just going up at a decent, it's almost like we could just return to that 30% compounded annual growth rate. And we'll get there pretty quick. Like things will move pretty quick. It might bore you all the way to a million, I think is what I heard Czech say, which is just absolutely fantastic. But ton of stuff there, Brandon. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, we're kind of seeing a little bit of some manipulation here now that Wall Street's in, right? I mean, everybody thinks at the end of the day, all right, you know, we had October, Moonvember, like these things. It normally Q4 is not only bullish for Bitcoin, but it's bullish for the stock market, equities, all of these things. And, you know, we saw during the COVID craze, you could essentially put out a dartboard with letters on it, just throw darts and then, you know, pick that stock and that ticker was going up at that point in time. So I think we have different market conditions now, but I think the fundamentals are as good as they've ever been. I mean, you know, with this dip, we saw 30,000 Bitcoin come off exchanges. I think right now the sitting amount is the first time I've seen it under 2.1 million Bitcoin on exchanges. We're seeing OTC desks get wiped as well, which is where these big players are going to buy. And so, you know, even though retail is the one that is selling and maybe some OG whales, you know, it looks like the people that are buying are actually taking it off exchanges, or they're giving it to BlackRock and JP Morgan and these guys by buying in those ETF products. So I think eventually it's going to play out like gold, where, you know, if you look at the gold ETFs, it was on, you know, a generational run when it first was launched and everybody was going into the gold ETFs. But now what do you see? You see central banks and all of these giant countries starting to load up on gold, the physical asset. Like they want gold bars. They don't want to hold these ETF products just so they could have, I don't know, JP Morgan or BlackRock or one of these other custodians hold the gold for them. I think the same thing's going to play out with Bitcoin. I think, you know, we've seen a lot of these sovereign wealth funds like Norway famously bought a bunch of MSTR, you know, years ago. We've seen the Abu Dhabi and the UAE sovereign wealth funds buying the IBIT Bitcoin ETF. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, some smaller countries start to play around with actually buying and holding Bitcoin, like El Salvador and the Kingdom of Bhutan. But I think we're going to start to see big players really start to dip their toe in and actually start to self-custody and hold their own Bitcoin, whether that's through mining or that's, you know, through actually trying to buy it from some of these custodians. And these guys aren't the players that are selling. So Jordy Visser, he's wrote this great article about Bitcoin's silent IPO moment. And I honestly, like the more I dive into it, the more I just see this playing out where it's all these OGs that came in early, you know, took on a lot of the risks of early Bitcoin. And now, of course, it doesn't seem risky. But hey, like during like 2008, 2009, 2010, like those early days when Bitcoin was first getting rolled out, I mean, let's be honest here, it was just like a few people kind of going in to Bitcoin, and Bitcoin was less than a dollar, and, you know, all of these different guys going in, and it didn't seem like a full-fledged bet now. And now it's, you know, $2.5 trillion asset, and everybody's like, all right, well, of course Bitcoin isn't going to fail. Well, I mean, it's taken 16 years to get to this point, but even though it's the biggest and the fastest growing asset, I still think there's going to be some little bumps and like learning curves here along the way. So, you know, I definitely think that we're starting to see the development of this market and with all of these different products, I guess, being formed on it. But, you know, I want to bring up the financialization of Bitcoin or the Bitcoinization of finance, kind of like mixing that back and forth, because we've seen a lot of that with housing. You know, I think a lot of the American dream right now to own a house and have 2.5 kids and a golden retriever, that's kind of dying to the ability to buy that house. But you talked a little bit about whole number bias. I always like to allude to the number of wallets with like 10 million or 1 million sats, just how low that number is. Last bull run, we had exchanges blow up. You saw FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name it. But the true power of Bitcoin is getting it off an exchange into cold storage. This bull run, I'm trusting Trezor, the company that's been around for over a decade, and they just had a brand new release of the best hardware wallet in the game, the Trezor Safe 7. It's got the first audible secure element. No other hardware wallet has this. On top of it, I travel a lot, so I need an easy way to connect my Bitcoin hardware wallet to my laptop, phone, what have you. Therefore, it is the easiest way and has the best connectivity to access your Bitcoin. This is truly how you become your own bank, and the best way to do that is with a Trezor Safe 7. So you could go to the affiliate link down below and get yourself one right now, and do it quickly because they are flying off the shelves, folks. So do it with the easiest and best way to get your Bitcoin off exchanges. So go to the affiliate link down below, get yourself a Trezor Safe 7, and get your Bitcoin off exchanges in the easiest way possible. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. To buy that house. But you talked a little bit about whole number bias. I always like to allude to the number of wallets with like 10 million or 1 million sats, just how low that number is. What is it going to take for us to kind of get that adoption going? Do you think this TradFi coming in is helping or hurting that adoption?
It's a tough call. And the reason it's a tough call is because Bitcoin is money for enemies, right? And I think that TradFi really is coming in right now, that this is the part of the cycle where the institutions are the big players. You know, and I was reminded of, there's a few things that regarding self-custody and even just not trusting different counterparties, which again, you should not, right? You should absolutely not trust the different counterparties. But I was thinking about back last week, we had Larry Fink, and there's two things that came out from Larry Fink. Now, the one that kind of got most of attention was the idea that he said that sovereigns were coming into the space. He said that sovereigns were taking their position. They were being smart about it. They were buying on the way down. They were getting their Bitcoin position. But the other thing that really stood out to me was he talked about how he was wrong. Was it Andrew Sorkin? I was reading him a quote about how, like, things he had previously said about Bitcoin. It was basically admitting that he was wrong. The second thing that I want to add to that was, of course, Vanguard. Vanguard, under new leadership, came in and is now finally, I forget the quote, but basically the original CEO of Vanguard, Tim something or other, was saying that, like, no way, while he's here, are they going to offer Bitcoin products to their customers. Well, he's gone, and they immediately started offering basically Bitcoin products to their customers. Now, the signal there, the really big signal, so I think the biggest asset holders in the world is BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure that State Street has said anything favorable, but they probably has. But having the head, Larry Fink, of the largest asset manager in the world come out and say that he was wrong about Bitcoin, that's your signal. And the reason it's your signal is not because he's, you know, stay humble, stack sats, which is always a great thing to do. He was basically giving complete cover for everyone else to do a 180. He was giving every other institution in the world, basically CYA, cover your ass, that you can come out and say that you were wrong about Bitcoin and you're changing your position and getting on board now as well too, because Larry Fink did, because Vanguard did. And so I think that was like, this already feels like the big institutional players, but I think those shifts making it, we say, de-risking the career aspects of being on board with Bitcoin from an institution, from a financial advisor standpoint, from like a small, maybe mom and pop kind of, let's say, money managers. He's made that possible for them. I think that was actually really key. That was the thing that wasn't necessarily heard by everybody while they were so focused on these sovereigns coming in, is that you have full permission, right? You can now join BlackRock and Larry Fink. Additionally, the other thing that I want to hit on, because that was really interesting talking about, is it a good thing in trust? So I agree that you're going to have sovereigns and major institutional players. They're going to hold their own keys because they are different geographical regions and they don't trust each other. And it's interesting that you brought up mining as well, too, because I think that one of the benefits of the global institutional players getting into Bitcoin is going to be further decentralization of mining. And what do I mean by that? So specifically, just taking it from, it's just game theory playing out. I could have this wrong, but I'll tell you what I'm thinking here. We have big players like you could have Venezuela. They've got a ton of energy. They want to get in. You've got Saudi Arabia, right? And you've got the UAE. They have a lot of energy. They want to get in. As you see large, if you have Norway, if you have large sovereigns that have big energy resources that they can direct towards Bitcoin mining that they hold in self-custody, they will. The other thing, though, is that for those guys, a lot of times they're going to have wasted or stranded energy, right? So it's basically like no risk. It's a way of reaccumulating some of the cost of the resources that you already have. They don't need, unlike a publicly traded Bitcoin mining company, they don't need to sell their Bitcoin in order to meet costs, right? Infrastructure, pay people. They can take that from other resources. It's basically excess stuff that they already had kind of in play. So one of two things, I think you're going to see sovereigns with excess energy getting into the mining space and just mining and holding. That's all they're doing. It's just another way of accumulation. It's another way to kind of usually lower the cost of some of the resources to get back some of the existing costs. The other thing too, is that I do not think that they will be using centralized pools. I think that they will be spinning up their own pools, because why would you want to have your Bitcoin technically custodied with somebody else going to a pool in a different geographical region that could be adversarial if you can just deal with the time in between? Like, you don't need to get paid on an average on like with a full pay per share. You don't need to get paid out from every block that comes. You can just mine until you find one and keep that in self-custody. So I think you're going to see rich energy-rich nations getting into the mining space, holding onto that Bitcoin, and then also not relying on pools and basically setting up their own geographical local pool, running their own for themselves.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, something that you said a little bit earlier was something that was interesting to me, where we're basically looking at these Saudi Arabia and these energy dense countries coming in. And I think, you know, with Samson Mao, what he's been doing, and with Jan 3 kind of going around, I mean, I know just offhand speaking to him a few times, Prince Philip and all of these guys doing great work, is the energy aspect is something that is, I guess, more appealing to them. And the crazy thing about all of that is that, you know, that's KYC free Bitcoin. So we don't really know who could be potentially mining at the end of the day. And I mean, you know, we saw that, we talked about it earlier, the China ban. And then now we've basically got Kazakhstan, you know, being one of the bigger players because everybody moved from China to Kazakhstan, at least allegedly. And now, even if you look at some of the hash power, I mean, China's still the number two country of all the hash rate, at least allegedly, from what we can tell, compared to the rest of the world. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to be something that's going to help distribute the Bitcoin network even better and kind of do this, keep the decentralization aspect. But you said something that I want to kind of go back to a little bit about these entities kind of having that centralization around Bitcoin. So obviously, we've got, you know, Michael Saylor and MSTR now buying a bunch of Bitcoin. They have over 650,000. They have more than any country. I think actually they might even have more than all the countries combined now at this point. And then if you combine all the other publicly traded companies, they also have more Bitcoin than all the other publicly traded companies combined. So is that a worry of yours? Is this centralization that we could see here going forward, at least with like one giant entity like a BlackRock having, you know, maybe a million Bitcoin, or the ETFs having like 1.5 million? I think if you break it down with Coinbase and all of their custody, they have like well over 12% of the network, which is something that worries me. So are you worried about any of these potential centralization risks as, you know, this market is developing and as TradFi is coming in?
Oh yeah, 100% without fail. Centralization is always going to be a risk. And we are in a state of like decentralization even globally, right? I think COVID was the peak of basically like just-in-time manufacturing, complete centralization. And we've now realized that leaves you extremely vulnerable. And the same thing applies here to Bitcoin in the sense that, you know, for anyone that's into in MicroStrategy and done very well, I'm kind of putting it in the category of like trading shitcoins to try and get more Bitcoin. Like, yes, okay, you've done great. Maybe it's been a great performer for you. If you don't necessarily have it locked up in some sort of like tax advantaged account, because that's always the risk, right? There will always be a million reasons why it's better to leave it somewhere else. You don't have to worry about it. Maybe there's some sort of tax advantage. But realistically, until you take that MicroStrategy share and sell it and buy Bitcoin and keep it in self-custody, it's like you haven't realized profits, right? Those are all just basic paper gains. If you don't actually have the Bitcoin, it's nothing but paper gains there. So the biggest risk that I see is one, there's always the possibility, right, that one of those centralizing custodians are going to be compromised. The big reason too is because it's just people. Like, even think about it from, we see scams in the space all the time. And I've seen some crazy ones as of late. I've seen like paper letters getting sent out to try and fish for emails. I've seen podcast requests getting sent out to people to try and get malicious software. The biggest weak point that we ever have with Bitcoin is going to be the human aspect of it. These companies are run by people who could be pressured, they could be put under strain, they can be bribed, they could be bad actors. I don't think that Coinbase custody is going to blow up tomorrow, and I'm sure they have a lot of procedures and things in place, but they're still fallible. There still is that risk there. So I hate to see the centralization risk. I also do worry that, again, going back to, we haven't had a blow up this cycle, we haven't relearned this lesson. I worry that, like, even if it's not coming from a malicious standpoint, that as much as I like Saylor, especially in the early days, pumping her bags and getting out there, really being a, we just say, someone that could talk to TradFi that they would at least respect, right? Because he was a billionaire tech mogul, right? He was right about the mobile wave. He was able to command authority from that kind of audience that needed that sort of thing. But I really worry that, like, right now, right? And it's a shot, but I don't mean it for it to be a shot. Or maybe I do. I don't know. I'll have to think about it a little bit more. But I feel like he's leading everyone astray. Like, it feels like the Pied Piper. We're offering, like, you know, yield and return and different products. And the dude just got $1.44 billion of cash on hand. Like, it's like, I can understand. I think, by the way, that I think he's doing that from a credit standpoint. I don't think he's doing it necessarily just to pay out, like, to have some cash on hand to pay out the dividends. Like, yes, but you could just as easily roll that into Bitcoin and have, like, your Bitcoin spending in your Bitcoin savings account, and you can just sell whatever Bitcoin you need in order to meet the dividends. Like, there's no reason you can't use Bitcoin as your currency for both portions, which would be much more Bitcoiner of you. I think that was a way to try to appeal to the places he's trying to get capital from, to try, especially with Tether getting kind of the downgrade, despite having more than full reserves for gold and Bitcoin. They got more than, they have reserves beyond their obligations, but they're higher risk because it's gold and Bitcoin. Get the fuck out of here, right? That's just complete bullshit. And so I think he's putting cash on the balance sheet to try and deal with that. But the over-financialization, the over-centralization, this engineering, they're normalizing yield in Bitcoin again. That's right. Go back to BlockFi. Go back to Celsius. If you're getting a yield on Bitcoin, where the fuck is the yield coming from? It's not a good idea. It means you're taking on third-party risk. There's something going on here in order to achieve that. Now, I'm not saying he's doing anything illegal or anything necessarily like immoral from the historical lens as well too, but he's normalizing behaviors in Bitcoin to newcomers coming in. He is one of the biggest evangelists, and there's always been the two things that kind of struck me is that, one, he does say, like, just buy the Bitcoin, but then he's selling all these products. It's like, I get it, right? But still, it's a little bit eh. But the other one that really always bothered me was that, despite even speaking at, like, the Rand events and things too, Ayn Rand Society, he never puts it in the position of competing with the dollar. He never says that it competes with the dollar. He talks about it as an asset and a store of value. Now, I believe I understand why he does that. Again, I'm mind reading a little bit here. I was like, okay, you have a fiduciary duty to your shareholders for a publicly traded company that resides within the U.S. government. I don't think you're going to make too many friends, or you might have some issues with your, you know, your S&P listing if you're coming out there and saying, like, oh no, Bitcoin ends the dollar. But I think that's the centralization risk, and that's the narrative right now that is really, really concerning. Because ultimately, and I know this will sound hyperbolic. Let's say Bitcoin matches gold parity. We're sitting at 20 trillion. We're sitting around $1 million from here, but it's just a store of value that people keep at Schwab, or they have an ETF, or they have a little bit of a MicroStrategy treasury company, right? It's just another financialized USD asset for you to hold on to try and protect yourself from the debasement of the currency. In my opinion, it's failed. Bitcoin is money. Money is meant to be spent. It's meant to be held. It is not an asset. It is the most saleable liquid good that you can transact with anyone around the world 24/7, held in self-custody. Nobody can take it away from you. To be a store of value, and Parker Lewis is great on this point, to be a store of value, it must also be a medium of exchange, because you must have that intention of exchanging it in the future, right? It's just a medium exchange at a different point in time. But for Bitcoin to actually, not only, like, it helps us, it helps our mindset, but that Bitcoin to actually, like, fix the money, fix the world, in order to keep these financial how do I say, demons in check, you have to be able to call their bluff, call when they're rehypothecating, call when they're shorting it without any coverage, and you need to take it into self-custody. And for Bitcoin to work, for Bitcoin to succeed, that means that it's not just a store of value. It's not something that you look at in your trading account, right? It's something that you hold dear and that you keep yourself and that you can spend when you need to protect yourself from the uncertainty of the future. So with all that, yes, this is a centralization risk. There's always that hack and compromise. It's probably not major at this point in time, but I still think someone's getting blown up. Someone's going to get caught. It's the good old, Charlie Munger. And why am I not pulling up his name right now? My God, the Oracle from Omaha. It'll come to me in a second.
Oh, Warren Buffett.
Thank you. I don't know why my brain was like, you can think of his nickname, but not his actual name. It's the tide is going to go out at some point in time, and you're going to see who's swimming naked. And don't get me wrong. I don't think that these moments aren't going to happen. I think that they'll happen much faster in Bitcoin because we can self-custody, right? So things like in-kind redemption, in-kind creation for the ETFs, I think it's going to be really important to keep everybody in check. So the biggest risks, I think, is that you just normalize Bitcoin as not money, as you just normalize it as it's something that you leave with your brokerage account. It's just another asset that you have. If you never use it, you never try it, you never play with the tools, you never take self-custody, you never go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. Like, how many people, and this would explain also why I had that big price correction to 80,000. How many people got into Bitcoin in one of these vehicles but never even checked out a Bitcoin podcast? They're not even here, right? They might listen to like one or two things about where the price is going, but they never explored the idea of like stateless money, right? Why trusted money is a bad idea, right? They've never gone down any of the Bitcoin rabbit holes, the truth about government, the truth about money, the truth about your health, the truth about family and education. So they never, even on an individual level, they never bettered themselves. They were still just the same trapped on the hamster wheel, fiat mindset, short time preference person that's happy to vote for another government because that's going to fix it. Of course it is this time. We'll just switch out the guy. We'll switch out one puppet in power controlled by BlackRock and all the guys for another puppet in power controlled by BlackRock and Vanguard and JP Morgan and all them as well too. That's the biggest risk, is that Bitcoin fails in the mission of actually fixing the world. And it fails in the mission if we don't take self-custody. And that's just becoming way too normalized and people are way too comfortable with it at that point, this point in time.
One of my absolute favorite things about Bitcoin is meeting all of you in person. So mark your calendars for February 28th and come down to where I've called home for the past 8 years, Tampa, Florida. The Bitcoin Bay Foundation is putting on the Sound Money Soiree. It's the third annual. It's a night of Bitcoin, poker, an open bar, and a silent auction. All support will go to Bitcoin Bay, a nonprofit that is creating a circular economy down in Tampa Bay, Florida. They're doing absolutely great things, and it's the Bitcoin community that I've called home for such a long time, and these guys are absolutely crushing it. So please do anything you can to support. Buy your tickets today. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE to get 10% off your Sound Money Soiree tickets.
So do you know anything about Bitcoin?
No.
You guys can come down and see this ugly mug. Come boogie on the dance floor, shake it, and now that Bitcoin's over 100K, you can do it all with your girlfriends. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
Is that Bitcoin fails in the mission of actually fixing the world. And it fails in the mission if we don't take self-custody. And that's just becoming way too normalized and people are way too comfortable with it at that point, this point in time.
Yeah, I think, you know, what Square is doing, I want to get into that here in a little bit about, you know, adding in all these terminals. I think that's going to be a step, but, you know, I'll get into some of my thoughts about that a little bit later. I do want to hit on the point that you brought up about Saylor, because I think that is interesting. You know, he's bringing up all of these different markets, right? You know, he brought up the $300 or $200 trillion credit market here today, which I haven't heard him talk about it before, but, you know, there's the $300 trillion bond market, the $145 trillion fixed income market, now the $200 trillion credit market that he's going after. I mean, all of these markets are just absolutely ginormous, and he's building all these financial products to kind of, I guess, I call it like utilize the old system to kind of get as much exposure to the new system as you possibly can. But I think the store of value just fits right now just because of the development of where we're at. And I do think we're going to get to that, you know, peer-to-peer exchange here eventually. I think it's just, you know, it's kind of, you know, I guess part of the development right now. I mean, the Lightning Network, it's still, I mean, it's great to, you know, do some small transactions, but every now and then there is some mess ups there. So there are some things that I think we need to develop just as an ecosystem to kind of go around. But something that Checkmatey also said at one point that really stood out to me is, you know, we saw 60% of the wallets at one point in time had a cost basis above that 95K. So, you know, once we got under that, well, you know, majority of wallets were underwater at that point. So we did have a lot of new players coming in. And, you know, to your point, they probably aren't sitting here, you know, listening to their 40 hours a week of Bitcoin podcasts like the rest of us, right? You know, what do you think, I guess, in the short term, is this, you know, just kind of, I guess, let's call it like a traditional asset in a sense where, you know, we're seeing the big players understand what they're buying, right? I mean, yep. After 2008, they all came in and bought real estate after it crashed because they were licking their chops and seeing it all priced so low. And I feel like that's kind of the same thing going on right now. And instead of seeing this potential wealth transfer where we're getting, you know, a lot of new players buying Bitcoin, instead it's just essentially playing out just like, you know, every other asset. Is that something that I guess worries you too, in a sense? Because that's something that is keeping me up at night, where Bitcoin's supposed to be for the plebs. But with the more I look on chain, the more it worries me that it's playing out just exactly like every other asset.
That is the big worry right now. And I completely agree. And it comes down to even like, it's surprising to me because I never would have thought that this would happen. But it's, again, you got fear and greed, right? Fear and greed are the biggest motivators for people by far, without a doubt. And so when we had this Bitcoin Trojan horse that was going into the traditional finance system, it was going in there. The big players, they, at this point in time, they're well aware of the threat that Bitcoin is to them. They're well aware of the threat that Bitcoin is to them, their existing power structure. And so they have to pivot. They have to change. They have to say that they're wrong, like Larry Fink, and try to basically get on the right side of it. Right, to position themselves to benefit from it to the best of their abilities. So knowing that it is a threat to them, my biggest worry is that the Bitcoin Trojan horses that we kind of sent into this disgusting, corrupt, fiat, traditional finance system is that they've been offered a really nice seat at the table. That they got in there, they got into the palace, and the food was great. And now they're one of the big players. Now they're one of the big dogs. Now they have the say. Now they have the influence. Now they have the luxury that goes beyond it. They have the prestige of the existing system that goes with it. So in the short term, like, all right, whatever. I'm throwing shade, but you're still wonderful human beings. Like Jack Mallers teaming up with Cantor Fitzgerald to do basically, you know, Bitcoin-backed loans. Like, I'm going to hand over your Bitcoin for fiat and risk that. Doesn't seem like it's necessarily a great idea. It's not nearly the same sort of ethos that we had when he was doing like the Bitcoin Beach and the El Salvador push, right? Adam Back in Blockstream, definitely getting in on the treasury side, right? And playing in the background there as well too. We got Sailor with all these different products as well. I think the existing system where I thought that for us, it'll probably be from a position of fear, that if there is a crackdown, if the Bitcoin threat to the existing system gets a little bit, we'll say, turned up, that he gets turned up there, we can expect that they could try to, in some geographical regions, to try and crack down on, like they did with the Samurai devs, right? Which, guys, by the way, if you haven't checked it out, go and sign the petition, try and circulate that story. We need to get those guys out of prison. That we may see self-custody be illegal, or I think I saw images going around of the IRS asking you to report the addresses that you now have as well, too, on one of their forms. That they're going to want to find out where your Bitcoin is. They're going to maybe try to outlaw self-custody at some point in time, which makes sense. A dying system would basically kick and scream on the way out. So I always expected the traditional finance side to come at it from that same sort of perspective. Same like the war on drugs. We're going to use extreme punishment and crackdown and fear to get you to comply with what we want. But what I'm worried right now with everything that we're seeing here is they're going to complete other direction. They're taking the biggest companies, the biggest players in Bitcoin, and rather than try and scare them into compliance, it was greed. It was, hey, why don't you give us your Bitcoin? We'll put it on the balance sheet, right? We'll give you a whole bunch of equity. We can lever it up. We'll get you some more. You can be even wealthier than you currently are. That rather than trying to pressure them into comply, they basically just offered them that like golden throne that they could then sit on. So short term, yes, I worry that we've lost our Bitcoin maxi spirit. I think, you know, it's we should have in Bitcoin a position of let me say, kind of neutral skepticism towards everything that we see. In the same way that when I'm teaching somebody about self-custody, I'm going to go with the base assumption that the computer or your phone is or will be compromised. So we're never going to trust it. We don't have to trust that device. So we're not going to. That we shouldn't be necessarily as trusting of the players that are currently here. It is possible for people to get greedy, get corrupted, or to go even just be wrong, right? They may not in any way be lying. They could just be making a mistake and be wrong. And I think that is a centralization risk. But, and here's the fun but, at the end of the day, so long as people are taking self-custody, and again, if you want to make sure that, you know, all these big players can't manipulate the price, then you have to take the keys. If you want to make sure that it's not just going to be completely centralized, then you have to take the keys. The adversarial nature of Bitcoin between different geographical regions and powers, I think will ultimately prevent that from necessarily being the case, right? At least in almost like a regional sect that you may have, like, you know, major ETF or bank holder within the US, but there's going to be another one in Turkey, in Russia. In Russia, we had, I think it was VTB Bank, the state-owned bank, was pushing for a 7% allocation for Bitcoin. So the adversarial nature between countries throughout the world will, I think, help kind of keep that in check and make sure that Bitcoin's not just centralizing in one location and getting completely controlled. That, again, you have every incentive. If you're not a friend of like BlackRock in the US, then you don't have a benefit of being like, oh yeah, citizens, go and buy that. That's the perfect option. No, you're going to tell them to take self-custody. You as a nation are going to take self-custody. So short term, I think it's a risk. I think people will end up getting hurt. I think it also allows the worst people to have manipulation or influence in the network. Medium term, I don't think it particularly matters. I think the game theory plays out and we still win because it's money for enemies. And this is going to be, again, it's going to be global. It's not like it's just going to be US or Western nations. It's going to be global phenomenal. And long term, Bitcoin wins and we're all filthy rich and we have girlfriends. That's how this plays out.
I'm still waiting for the girlfriend. So ladies in the chat, I mean, hit me up. The comments are wide open. But, you know, I kid. Either way, though, I mean, I do think that there's a lot of interesting developments, right? I mean, you know, we touched on Cash App and Square here. And I want to dive into your thought about it because, you know, I think this potentially could be one of the biggest moves that's ever made in Bitcoin. Of course, we've got, you know, Strike and some of these other players, you know, Jack, friend of the program. You know, I know that they've been doing these things, but Cash App is a different beast. You know, I mean, like you can buy stocks on Cash App. It's like essentially, you know, I can't think of the term, but like financial tech bank or whatever they're calling it these days. But you essentially, some people I know use Cash App instead of owning a bank account because you can send money easily. You can buy stocks. You can buy Bitcoin if you'd like. And then now you can pay. Granted, there's a lot of people that don't utilize all this. And, you know, we've seen the development of Apple Pay kind of take off as well, where, you know, I think I think it took like 10 to 15 years or something to get like Apple Pay to get even like 10% of the total payment market share just in the United States alone. So I think we're still a ways away from Bitcoin becoming a medium of exchange. And I think Bitcoiners are going to want this all to happen all at once because of how big of a move Square has made. But what are your kind of expectations around there? I know I gave a little bit of my two sats there, but what's your expectations for the development of the peer-to-peer exchange here, Nathan? Why would you ever hold generational wealth on a piece of paper? It doesn't make sense. You need a foolproof solution, and I've got it for you. You could get this as low as $25, and if you use promo code GreenCandle, you could get 10% off. Being around for 12 years, they've engineered the perfect and most easy to use solution. I've partnered with CryptoSteel to offer for you guys just that. It is the cheapest and most secure way to store your seed phrase. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have too many things where I think one ton is going to fall on this, but it could survive all of that and more. So go to CryptoSteel.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle. You can get 10% off your entire order if you go there today. So go ahead and protect your generational wealth and do it with CryptoSteel. All right, enough from me. Back to the show. Made, but what are your kind of expectations around there? I know I gave a little bit of my two sats there, but what's your expectations for the development of the peer-to-peer exchange here, Nathan?
Well, I think more than anything, and I really appreciate what Jack and the team over at Square and Block have done here, is I think it normalizes it. And again, it also helps normalize that medium of exchange amount. Because even if someone's not transacting in Bitcoin, you start to see people doing that. It's going to add little touch points, little curiosities along the way. Because think about how many times you had to hear about Bitcoin before you bought some, right? Almost no one is like the first time they hear about it, they go out and get some. I'm sure there are a few psychopaths out there, and God bless you. But usually we have to have a couple touch points before we get into it. So it's another wonderful touch point that puts it again in that money category. Because when you see it at a Square terminal, they're not using it as a savings account. They're literally spending it. It's the checking account. They're going ahead and using it. And I just got to say, like, I could be a sucker. I could totally be wrong here. You know, as Bitcoiners, we're pretty resistant to propaganda and emotional manipulation. I think that comes from a healthy skepticism and a true understanding of how the system actually operates and what the evils behind it. But I'll tell you, like with Ross Ulbricht, like Trump totally had me dead to rights with releasing Ross Ulbricht. Like if I had been stateside, I would have found a way to vote, and I'm sure I could have in a few states. That was an emotional tug that absolutely he had me. He had me. And I see the same sort of thing here with Jack, where the Jack Dorsey redemption arc is one of my favorite stories right now, and I absolutely love to see it. Now, again, it's me putting my own, like, you know, my own thoughts. I'm reading his mind. I'm pushing their things there. And maybe he's not this wonderful person, but I'll tell you what, I fucking love the story, and I'm going to stick with it, at least for the time being, until I know otherwise. Because to go from the guy behind Twitter and all the censorship and deplatforming and just how god-awful it was, you can think of the 2016 election and the run-up there, just like before Elon bought it, just how terrible that public square was, that anytime there was anyone who had just the smallest threat to, I'd say, that kind of, we say that kind of modern leftist, postmodernist kind of order, they were getting just smacked down, removed, silence, gone. And it works. Like, deplatforming absolutely works. I'll never forget the episode of him on Joe Rogan with Tim Pool. That just seemed like an absolute struggle session. So for him to then, you know, I had a very bad taste in my mouth about Jack then. Absolutely did. And then for him to sell Twitter, and basically he's like working with the Human Rights Foundation, building out tools for political dissidents. He's all in on Bitcoin in terms of now medium exchange at 4 million merchants. And he doesn't have to do that. And there probably is a little bit of, we say, like, risk to the company in doing so, either perceived risk or just the way people are going to interpret it or the resources that are going to it. We've got BitKey, you've got Cash App doing Bitcoin. I know that just they finally raised the limit on what you can withdraw per day, which is fantastic. I love to, we got, I didn't even mention BitChat, but him and Callie and BitChat, we have these decentralized communication networks. So I hope it's true. I love the story. I love what Jack is doing. I have some like disagreements with the best, with the tech, but I still think it's a wonderful product and definitely has its niche market. And I want to see more of it. It's nice to actually have someone, because at least for now, I don't look at him necessarily with skepticism. Right? It's like, I think you're actually a Bitcoiner. I think you're here for freedom and those fundamental purposes. Like, what are we trying to do? We're trying to lift humanity beyond the point. Like, the separation of state and church was like massive in terms of like improving our living standards. Getting away from forced labor into, instead of having the Industrial Revolution and you know, engines, combustion engines, was massive for our human advancement. And I really do think that the next leap forward in human advancement comes from that separation of state and money. I think Jack does too. I think he's doing a really good job of at least setting up the foundation, not necessarily to make it happen, but to make it easier for it to happen, to carve out that path, to be the first one to go down it. So I love what Square's doing. I love what the team over there is doing. I love the freedom, the Human Rights Foundation work they're doing, the tools for freedom fighters that they have. BitChat, which, by the way, guys, if you haven't already, there's already been a few cases. Like, we heard, Ben heard directly from people in Jamaica that were using BitChat. We talk about, like, being prepared, right? You should learn these tools, especially so that even if you're not, let's just say you're not even going to necessarily take all your Bitcoin in self-custody right now, learn how to self-custody now. So if something goes a little bit wonky, you start seeing some smoke, you're concerned there's fire, you can take self-custody and you're not panicking to do so. You already know how to use it. And on that same note, one app from Jack Dorsey and Callie, BitChat, which is basically a Bluetooth mesh network communications app, which is so cool. It means that you can talk with people without the internet, as long as you're within a certain kind of geographical region, we can find a way to you. It's one of those things too that you should also do right now. You should have that on your phone, have it ready, like you have a fire extinguisher under the sink, in case there is a outage, there is a emergency, there is some sort of a natural disaster, that you're already familiar with another tool that can help you in that sort of event. It's the same way that you want to make sure that you're familiar with Bitcoin self-custody before you feel that you absolutely need to. And trust me, you actually need to right now. So that's my thoughts on Jack and Square. I love what they're doing. And I hope, because I'd love to see the numbers, I suspect the amount of people using Bitcoin for transactions at the terminals is quite low. particularly compared to the entirety of all the transactions. What I really hope, if we go even back to that kind of 2017 era where we thought we were going to get a lot more of this medium of exchange kind of kicking off, I hope we can just set it and forget it, because these things will take time. I hope that at no point in time, I hope this isn't too costly for them on the back end, that this never has to be repealed, because it's one of those things that, like, if it's just there, people will eventually find their way to it, right? Bitcoin, you're a merchant. You got a, say, you got a one, you got, you know, Keys Pub, right? Down in Florida, right? We have Keys Pub down in Florida is accepting Bitcoin. No one's really using it, right? But then we have that moment. We never got the retail FOMO. We never got the euphoria. As soon as you do, if you're already ready to accept it, you know people are going to want to experiment with it. You know they're going to want to try it. We just don't know when that wave is coming.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's funny you talked about, you know, Ross Ulbricht and potentially coming stateside. I mean, I honestly didn't realize this until I started doing some digging here lately. But, I mean, if you listen to some of the United States founding fathers, I know you're up in the Great White North, but what they said about banks in historically, it is very interesting and kind of eye-opening. I'll read a couple quotes here. Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to John Taylor in 1816 that said, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies." And Benjamin Franklin said, "The inability of colonists to get power to issue their own money permanently out of the hands of George III and the international bankers was the prime reason for the Revolutionary War." And now we're all of a sudden supposed to just be like, oh, you know, BlackRock, Larry Fink, and all of these guys, it's you know, good that they're getting into Bitcoin. But I think, you know, getting back to the point of what you're saying, kind of the freedom money and that self-custody, I think is extremely important, just because, I mean, these are American values. These are the reasons why America was, you know, built up and become the most powerful country in the world. And we've kind of lost our eye, got our eye off the ball just a tad bit. And, you know, this degradation takes years at a time. So I think the only way back to, you know, true self-sovereignty is having, you know, self-custody and utilizing all of these tools that you're describing. And you guys do great work over at Bitcoin Mentor. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and some of the developments that you're seeing over at Bitcoin Mentor, just in your time and in this past, what, like a little over a year, I think is how long you guys have been doing it, or am I wrong? Is it a little longer than that?
Little longer than that. So we launched on the last halving, and then I've been full-time with the company and BTC session since like February of this year. But even to that point, I'm pretty sure the US had two attempts at a central bank before the Federal Reserve as well, too. The based gentlemen that were the founding fathers were well aware of the threat that bankers were to society, to the nation as a whole. And they still are, guys. And that's why we want to make sure that we're like, make no mistake. Like, I always assume that the computer is not a trusted environment. Just assume the bankers want your Bitcoin, and that's what they're trying to do. They're going to do everything they can to try and get your Bitcoin. And the best thing you can do is keep it. So over at Bitcoin Mentor, what we do is basically education and consulting, usually for self-custody, but realistically, it's anything in Bitcoin. It's not large commercial mining. And it's just the one-on-one education kind of thing. You can think about basically for anyone that usually it's kind of one of two avenues. Either they don't have anyone in their life that's also involved in Bitcoin. They just want someone to maybe consult on the best setup for them, kind of just double check the homework, look over everything, make sure they're okay. Or a lot of the times they're professionals, entrepreneurs, they just don't have the bandwidth, right? The resources are free and available. And that's exactly what we do at BTC Sessions. I will happily send you the best videos, my recommendations. Here's some articles. Here's my favorite books. I will give you everything because we're here for adoption. But you do have people, some people are figuring this out, that are going from zero to a large position very quickly, that don't have the bandwidth to do their 40 hours per week, let alone like 100 hours to prepare and figure out what the best self-custody setup is. And so they're more than happy to pay somebody, like they do for an accountant or a lawyer, to come on board, advise, and help them make sure they're good, they're set up, and ideally at the end of our time together, you don't need us anymore. You can go out and show somebody else. But in terms of insight, though, I'll give you like three insights that I've had from this last year that are really strong, particularly in Canada, but also in the US as well. So one, the boomers are coming. And so I am seeing a lot of older generation, and the best thing about it is that they're coming from a place of kind of like, it's all about their grandkids. It really is. It's the antithesis to the boomer meme, in the sense that they're coming in and they're like, even times like my family thinks I'm crazy, but I just want to set them up. And I really believe that this is the way that it's going to happen. And I agree with that sentiment. And so it's not even for them. It's for the next generation and their grandkids. And I love to see that legacy building. The other one is that a lot of the players that are coming in that, again, you can think of it, that these are older people that have substantial wealth and that they're taking a large position in Bitcoin. And so what are they selling? Real estate. I've seen a ton of people. They're not liquidating necessarily their S&P 500. It's not their equity. I'm seeing a lot of real estate investors selling off parts of their portfolio or sometimes the thing in its entirety and moving into Bitcoin. I also know of gold bullion dealers that were selling gold and buying Bitcoin. It's the sound money camp. So our allies, you know, our friends, our like-minded friends in the other sort of sound money hard assets camp are figuring this out and taking a Bitcoin position, which is wonderful to see. The other one, because this question is the one that these are the two questions I get all the time, which again goes back to you should have this adversarial mindset and you should be prepared. A lot of times I used to get, say like last year, a lot of the questions were on like kind of best self-custody practices. People would run in and be like, oh, I need a multi-vendor, multi-sig, like right off the hop. It's like, just slow down. Let's just make sure that you can understand using a cold card, self-custody, air gap transaction. We can build up to that, right? Maybe that's not the most appropriate setup for you. Everyone's going to be a little bit different and security is a moving target. I'm always trying to balance out the risk of loss versus risk of theft of overcomplicating things. But this year, it's all non-KYC and privacy. No one trusts their government right now that is coming to talk to me. And they are already in the position where like, this is going to happen. I just don't know when it's going to happen. And I want to make sure that I'm prepared. So real estate investors getting into Bitcoin, older real estate investors getting into Bitcoin this year has been a lot of what I've seen. And it's like, it's probably more than every second conversation. Probably 70% of the conversation that I'm having right now have a privacy element right baked into it.
Damn, that's interesting. I definitely think like that's, I mean, from like real estate perspective, I mean, I know you're up in Canada, so you got to stay pretty warm. But I think the use of Bitcoin miners for heat is something that I've always been, it's always piqued my curiosity, especially in homes. Like, I think that's going to, I guess, maybe revolutionize the home industry here, but that's a completely different topic for another time. And maybe that'll help avoid the collapse of another great real estate market here. But either way, Nathan, you guys are doing amazing work. So why don't you tell people where they can find out more about Bitcoin Mentor and where they can find out more about you, brother?
100%. So you can find me on Twitter as the BTC Mentor. You can check out Bitcoin Mentor by going to bitcoinmentor.io. But if you're going to do just one thing today, I want you to head to btcsessions.ca/learn. Pick a topic you don't know. Pick a skill you don't have in Bitcoin. Do me a favor, learn one new skill in Bitcoin this week. Not even that. Do it today or tomorrow. You got 48 hours tops. There's always an excuse. There's always something else that you have to do. Stop making excuses. You don't know everything yet. Learn something new. That's the best thing you can do for yourself, your family, and your security.
These guys are doing amazing work over at BTC Sessions, Bitcoin Mentor. I highly recommend it. I mean, you guys have orange-pilled probably, I don't know, at least millions maybe at this point in time. Like, help them get custody. So keep up the great work. And Nathan, thanks so much, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them, and I'll see you guys all at the next one.